This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good night and welcome to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Denothra Archer-Cartwright, family medicine specialist and consultant at Medical Concierge Services. We take care of all your medical care needs. So brought to you by Medical Concierge Services, we are on Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center, and we are a family medicine clinic. We also do home care and IV vitamin services. So check us out on our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram, Medical Concierge Services. And if you're looking for us on Instagram, it's medical_concierge_services. And so I want to thank you all for being with us tonight. And it's kind of open line tonight because we're going to talk about a couple of different topics that are kind of trending a little bit to do with like updates on COVID. We're also going to look at some causes of chronic joint pain as well, because that is it is something that comes up quite often in the clinic. And so, I like to do topics that are kind of trending and things that are happening, especially as we go into the fall season coming up and we're having changes in the weather. So we're going to touch on that on the second half of the show. We're just going to talk a little bit about some COVID updates and kind of like what's happening right now. As you know, in the Bahamas, we're still wearing face mask, and I say a lot of people are now realizing that it is probably about that time to get rid of the face mask, but we're not seeing a lot of changes in that area. And the question becomes now, why? Why is the policy not changing? If you look across the world, you can see that most people have stopped wearing masks for quite some time. And we've actually had less dangerous cases of COVID with people actually not wearing masks, because the science on masks wearing has been going back and forth. And when we realize and we really look at the data, we can see there's nothing really that supports these kind of mandatory mask wearing going on. And I think what really put highlight on it, and it allows me to touch on the fact that our head of state, our previous head of state, the Queen of England, did pass away. And a lot of people took time to reflect on that. And but it did put a spotlight on the international world and how things are happening. You would have heard maybe a few weeks ago, I would have talked about my recent trip to London and how open the city is, and that, you know, nobody's really talking about COVID. Nobody's really kind of focused on that. And there was no mandatory mask. Nobody asked about vaccine status or anything like that. And so, you know, that was kind of a window into another world of existence, because we're still kind of, teetering around as if we just found about COVID for the first time. So I've always said that our lawmakers, our authorities are always 6 months to a year behind on this. And they seem to be living in 2020 or early 2021. And so a lot of people have been talking about that. A lot of people are kind of tired. Even people who were kind of really invested in all of the restrictions and stuff are now realizing it doesn't make sense. And as the world opens up and people are traveling and you're seeing these things, people are also seeing it. And I think the funeral in London really kind of highlighted that, because it was very contrary. I was seeing pictures of people in churches in Nassau, and they had on their face coverings and everything. And then you had this really like this global event where just about everybody who's anybody, world leaders around the world, are all together in Windsor or down in London, and there was not a mask in sight. So if you want to jump in as we get into our conversation later, you can tell me how you feel about that. There is no science that supports mandatory mask wearing, per se, none that I know of. And I don't think that there are really any guidelines that are really pushing that right now. So I really do not know where our authorities would be getting that idea from. Now, it's very interesting that all of this is happening, and we do say that we follow like the CDC and all these other places. But it's interesting, on a recent special with the President of the United States, he actually declared that the pandemic was over. And there's been some controversy about that, because we've all wondered, what would it take for the pandemic to be over? What would it take for that status to be changed, since we never really got any objective goals in mind for what that would look like? I think it's quite clear now, if it wasn't before, because I think it was always clear, but it's more clear now. And I think a lot of people are back and realize that COVID isn't really going to go away, and that to think that you're going to have a zero COVID policy would lead you into the territory of countries like China, who are still really like in a hostile fight with this. But if you actually were pragmatic and looked at the science, you would realize that just like most viruses, it's kind of wax and wanes until it becomes, you know, just a part of the regular ecosystem of viruses and bacteria in our world. And we're kind of there now, I think, and it took a long time. And I think it took a long time because for the first time, we actually tried to stop a natural occurrence like this in such a drastic manner. I'm just going to read a few words from what the American president says, because this changes the dynamics of a lot of things. So even if you were following the narrative of the American government in the sense of them still considering the pandemic a problem, here is their leader basically saying he thinks that it's over. And just to remind you, he's had COVID a couple of times, most recently, and even had to be treated with medication because of it. So in a sense, he's absolutely right. However, it does not correlate with the policy that's coming out. And also, it doesn't correlate with the things that we're doing here either. So if we are following someone, possibly we're following the U.S., I'm not sure at this point who we are following or where our information is coming from. But this was really interesting. So I just read this, and this was an article by NPR. You can check it out on npr.org. But it says President Biden's declaration that the pandemic is over could complicate the administration's efforts to battle COVID-19, public health experts say. Biden made the remarks in Sunday's broadcast in 60 Minutes. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work, he said. But the pandemic is over, he said. And if you notice, no one's wearing a mask. Everyone seems to be in pretty good shape, and I think it's changing. President's comments come as public health officials are trying to convince Americans to get new boosters. So it's really, really interesting that the president's take on it is that that is pretty much over. You know, it's COVID is still here, and there's things that we need to do possibly, but it goes against what they're still trying to do. And so that's an interesting take that I saw from, in terms of adding a political spin. The question then becomes, are our decisions political or health-based? And I think within recent months to a year, we can see that a lot of our decisions may in fact be based on policy and politics rather than health itself. And so we need to re-examine for ourselves what is making this continue on, what is the purpose and what is the goal, and what does it mean now to get out of a pandemic? I think most of us are trying to live our lives as normally as possible. There is just some restrictions in the way, and I know that they're steadily changing them. My personal opinion, very slow, very behind the science. And I think that it's time to really jump into the reality of what's happening here. And I don't want to hear that, you know, certain amount of people need to be vaccinated in order to get there, because it really doesn't make any sense at this point. And so what are we trying to prove? What are we trying to do? Because we know that you're not going to get less You're not going to stop COVID from passing from person to person by those policies. So what now are the goal of those policies? Now, on one of a chat that I'm on, someone was posting something about school children and the school's response to her in terms of children wearing masks, or that a certain percentage of children needed to get vaccinated. And I hope that's not true. I'm not saying that's true at all, but that would be a very awkward and weird approach, especially because I think most people don't have a great interest. There are some in vaccinating their children as well. There is a lot of studies that are coming out that looks at the analysis of the benefits versus the risks. And we're finding that for children, there just really aren't the benefits required. So there's a really interesting article that's come out recently, and it's in the mainstream journals, okay? And it's this paper that looks at vaccine boosters for young adults. It looks at risk-benefit assessment and 5 ethical arguments against mandates in universities. So if you're not aware, a lot of kids who have gone off to universities, they were required to have boosters if they were in the United States. And so this particular study wanted to look at what that meant and did it make sense? Because we have a lot of young people that got 2 shots and now they're requesting them to get a 3rd shot. So I'm gonna read the abstract. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. And then we're going to probably go into our other topic. And I just want to put the phone lines out there in case anyone does want to join in, because I'm going to keep it pretty open if you want to discuss something else tonight. If you have a question for me, the doctor, we can talk about that too. And then we're going to talk a bit about joint pain as we wrap up the show. So 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. What are your thoughts about the mask? What are your thoughts about the president of the U.S. basically saying that the pandemic is over? And then what do you think about school children and in relation to mask wearing? Is it time to go back to normal? Do you feel safe? Do you feel ready to take the mask off? And then is there discrepancies against it? Because we know in certain places they don't really wear masks. And we do have tourists coming into the country who are not tested, they're not wearing masks and stuff. So where is that fine line of discrimination really at? And so the abstract, which was pretty much dropped in August 31st, 2022, they looked at the students at North American universities and the risk of disenrollment due to a 3rd vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine mandate. And they looked at the risk-benefit assessment of boosting people of this age group, and they provided 5 ethical arguments against the mandates. They estimated that 22,000 to 30,000 previously uninfected adults age 18 to 29 were to be boosted with the mRNA vaccine to prevent 1 COVID-19 hospitalization. So this is where we talk about risk assessment they're talking about what would be produced by boosting or giving another shot to these young people who many colleges are now trying to force to take another vaccine. And so they said 22,000 to 30,000 uninfected young adults between the 18 and 29 would need to be boosted to get rid of 1 possible COVID-19 vaccination. And what does that mean? That means the chances of a young person getting COVID is so low that you would have to boost almost 30,000 people to just save 1 person from hospitalization. That's how few of these young people are actually getting COVID and requiring hospitalization. So they use the CDC and they sponsor reported adverse event data. And they found that booster mandates may cause a net expected harm per COVID-19 hospitalization prevented in previously uninfected young adults. And they anticipated that 18 to 98 serious adverse events, including 1.7 to 3 booster-associated myocarditis cases in males and 1,373 to 3,234 cases of grade three or greater retrogenicity, which infers the daily activity. So what they found there was that for the young people that they were trying to boost, they would actually have 18 to 98 adverse events, right? So there was more harm being done to these young people than what they would gain in benefit. So you needed 30,000 of them to take a shot to get to hopefully, and this was not a guarantee, stop one hospitalization, whereas 18 to 98 of those people would end up with a serious adverse event. So if you can see those numbers, save one person from having to maybe get a little oxygen in the hospital versus 18 to 98 of those people now because of actually getting some serious event. So that was pretty not good. And they also saw an increased risk of myocarditis in those cases as well. Basically, given the high prevalence of post-infection immunity, the risk-benefit profile is even less favorable. So because after you get an infection, people are less vulnerable and there really is less and less benefits at that point in time. They start talking about their five kind of arguments that relate to that. So university booster mandates were basically found by this paper, and the paper is called COVID-19 Vaccine Boosters for Young Adults, a Risk-Benefit Assessment and Five Ethical Arguments Against the Mandates at University. And there were some really big universities that looked at this. We had Kevin Bardosh from the University of Washington, University of Edinburgh. You had Allison Krug from Artis Biochemical Communications. You had the University of Oxford represented, the University of Toronto, Harvard University, University of California, Johns Hopkins University. The guy there was from the Department of Surgery. Stephen Burrell from Johns Hopkins once again. And then Florida Department of Health, they were all involved in this. So this is a very interesting, and this really was a big one that's out there right now that people are really talking about in the medical community, about the fact that they're just finding that these universal booster mandates are just unethical in the US. And so no formal risk-benefit assessment exists for this group. So it looks at the fact that there aren't really any studies prior to giving out this booster to this age group, even looked at the risk assessment. So all of this stuff is being doing kind of post-vaccination. The vaccine mandates may result in not net expected harm to individual young people. That was number two. And then number three, the mandates are not proportionate. The expected harms are not outweighed by public health benefits given the modest and transient effectiveness of vaccines against transmission. And this is what we were kind of talking about before in terms of what are we doing with our mask mandates when we know that there's very transient effectiveness against transmission. And the rate keeps getting smaller and smaller as you do more boosters. And then number four here, US mandates violate the reciprocity principle because rare serious vaccine-related harms will not be reliably compensated due to gaps in current vaccine injury schemes. So persons who are injured, even if it's extremely rare, do not receive the type of compensation that it would require for you to even take this type of risk. And so they're kind of considering all of this very, very unethical. As you can see, I think a big reason why we've had this declaration that the pandemic is over is because a lot of legal work is being done right now, looking at a lot of the policies that happen and now how we relate to them. So, and then you have a lot of doctors who are coming out with, and scientists who are coming up with studies that are being reviewed now that are coming down the pipeline. And so a lot of this stuff really cannot be ignored anymore. And the world is just taking a very, very different turn. And a good one in a sense, because it's always important to look back at the things that you're doing and to analyze and figure out if what you did was correct or what you did was perhaps not a good idea. So number five, mandates create wider social harms. So they consider counter arguments such as a desire for socialization and safety and show that such arguments lack scientific or ethical support. Finally, they discuss the relevance of their analysis for the current two doses of COVID-19 vaccine mandates in North America. So that paper is out right now. Very, very interesting looking at that, because that is kind of the dynamic of what's happening right now with the US and boosters and different stuff. And so you have this counter narrative where the pandemic is being said by their leaders that it's over, but then there are still mandates, such as in this country, that are still there. And so that was very interesting. So that in itself puts a really weird spin on what's happening worldwide. And see that there are different possible approaches to how to move forward. And most people are figuring out that they just want to kind of move out of the space and kind of move on with our lives. So as again, I'm just going to open up the phone lines, and then we're going to talk about our other topic tonight, which is going to be joint pain. So the numbers 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back on the Doctor's Inn. And our second topic for tonight, we're going to be talking about joint pain. So you don't want to miss that. It's really, really common. It's something we deal with in the clinic. So when we come back, 10 possible reasons why you could have joint pain. Back in a moment.
Small Business Development Center is here to help small businesses throughout the entire Bahamas. To better serve you, we've made it easier to contact us. Call 461-7232, WhatsApp 359-0626 or 359-2394, email helpdesk@sbdcbahamas.com, or submit a ticket when you visit our help center at accessaccelerator.org. The Access Accelerator, empowering small business.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Janotha Archer, Family Medicine Specialist. Thank you for joining us. It's Tuesday evening on 96.9. Just a little bit of weird feedback in the back, producer, so we can take a look at that. I can hear some sounds in the background. But we're here tonight. We're talking a little bit just COVID updates, things that are going on. The fact that the American president did say that he thought the pandemic was over. So it is a turning factor if you're going to take that into consideration. You can join in the conversation, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. We're going to turn to our second topic of tonight. And what I really wanted to talk about is different reasons for joint pain. And this is something that really happens. It's very, very common. And people of all ages complain of joint pain. And so that's a really common thing that comes into the office. It's something that can be really frustrating for people, especially if they have chronic pain or they're wondering what's causing the pain. And we're just going to talk about some of the reasons you could be having pain. And of course, you know, if you have a pain that is continuous, you do want to see your physician. So we're going to talk about 10 possible reasons why your joints may be hurting a lot often. And
go from there. So most people kind of think about joint pain. We do think about arthritis, and there's so many different types of arthritis. You've got rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis. You can get infectious arthritis. You have forms of arthritis like gout and so many things. And those are usually the ones that are going to come to mind most often if you are feeling some types of joint pain. And usually we can tell by your history, if it is some type of arthritis, we can tell the type of arthritis it might be just from the way that you experience the pain. So you do want to come in and get that looked at. And so what is considered joint pain? Well, it's really just a discomfort that you may feel in one or more joints. And that's one of the key things to know, whether it's one joint or if it's multiple joints, and whether which one of your joints is really, really giving you the problem. One of the things we like to ask about is the type or the integrity of the pain. And this is usually kind of for patients to describe when you find that sometimes people would say they have an aching pain or a sharp pain that kind of goes away. Depending on the nature of that pain and the way that you describe that pain, it really gives us an idea of whether that pain, where it's coming from and what's causing it. The other type of thing you want to think about is like the period in which the pain comes. So when does it come on? What makes it worse? What makes it better? And the period in which you have the pain, is it in the morning? Is it in the evening? Is it at a certain time when it rains? Does the pain stay for a very long time? Does it take a while to go away? Or is it just, does it just come and go and it's just like a random thing? You also want to think about the intensity of the pain, because a lot of us will start off with some mild discomfort, and we usually rate pain on a scale from 1 to 10. And we like to say that the worst pain of your life would be a 10. Most people will come in and say, well, my pain is, but they're having a really calm conversation with you. And so it's usually not at that point, but pain is really kind of subjective for most people. And so we do try to gauge what the intensity of the pain, and that also gives an indication of what may be causing the pain. The other things that we try to look at is whether you're experiencing any swelling at the joint. Is there tenderness? Is there redness that we may look at? And is the joint warm? Because we talked about different types of arthritis, and sometimes you can also be able to tell if it's a serious problem, if the joint feels really hot or really warm, or it might have some type of infectious cause. Now, you also want to think about what other symptoms may be also contributing to what's going on with you. So if you're having fever, if you're having some other constitutional or like what we call generalized symptoms, then it may be something that's really a lot more serious than you think. But, you know, you have to consider too that there are some underlying things that could be related. So a simple joint pain may not be a simple joint pain, or it may be that simple. And so one that you would think about normally is basically a natural aging process. So just by getting older, our bodies do get some wear and tear. And the joints tend to be the area in which we get that wear and tear. So when you think about the joints, you have two bones, they have like a little cushiony cartilage on the top of them. And there is a space in between that has fluid and is connected by various ligaments that keep the joint together. Any of these places, any of these particular parts can end up with wear and tear. And usually if you have been really active in life, or if you've had some type of injury before, you can have more wear and tear than before. So when you're putting a lot of pressure on your weight, we call our weight bearing joints, which would be our large joints, such as our knees, your ankles, your hips, you do get a lot more wear and tear in those places. And this is why we also talk about people and their weight, because don't forget now, you pretty much develop your skeleton when in your up to your late teens, early 20s, your skeleton doesn't really grow much. So your joints are really made for you probably at 18 to 21. If you're gaining weight over the years, you're actually going to put more and more pressure on those joints, and this leads to more wear and tear. And eventually, the cushions in your joint do, for a lot of people, start to wear away after a while. So even if you were, you know, a really great athlete, you're bound to experience some form of joint pain or discomfort, and even what we call osteoarthritis, if you live long enough. So it is kind of a part of getting old. You just don't want to experience those things very young. You want to wait until you're much, much older or not have them at all. That would be best case scenario. So most people at some point as they get older will experience some type of joint pain. Usually this ends up being osteoarthritis. Now you can also have pain, what we call a bursitis, which is basically a fluid-filled sac in the back of the knee. And it's a little cushion between your bones, and you can find them in other areas between tendons, muscles, skin. And they can get really, really swollen. They can get really, really inflamed, and they can cause pain around your joints. And this can happen throughout the body in various different areas. But most frequently, when we think about bursitis, in a sense, this little swelling, this little sac that gets swollen, it's going to be around the elbow, it's going to be around the wrists, the shoulders, the knees, the hips, and the ankles. So these are the areas where a bursitis can happen, and people tend to have a really pain, and sometimes they even say, I'll have pain in the back of the knee or the other side of the joint, and usually we can palpate or try to feel for this in particular. And so that painful swelling can be really, really hard to deal with. And you want to come in and see, because those bursas actually are connected to a lot of nerve endings. And so you really want to have that looked at to make sure that there's nothing going around and to make sure that the surrounding knee is going to be okay. And, you know, you can come in, you can get it examined, and usually that's going to be a clinical diagnosis. Sometimes you may have to do further investigation, but bursitis. Now, if you've had a previous injury inside of the knee, then there's also a really good chance that you're going to end up with some type of pain in that knee. So I have one particular knee. I fell on this when I had my son and my daughter, actually, and I was falling, and I put a lot of pressure on that knee. And that's knee kind of gives me a bother. So old injuries, if you've had old injuries, especially ones that weren't treated, you know, if you were doing sports or you're doing something else, then do that. We have a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good night, Dr. Archer.
Hello, good night.
You had some rebroadcast this for a while, eh?
Just last week.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Archer, I'll make a statement and then I'd like you to comment with your knowledge, because, you know, I'm 58, and so I've had a lot of injuries, but, you know, I had a hyperextended the knee, like, and, you know, it torn the ligament, and mm-hmm. then I didn't realize how serious it was because, you know, it wasn't broken, but then I realized the ligaments are very crucial and they're very tender, and so I had a broken piece of my spine before. Somebody tried to rob me some time ago, and I was in a fight, you know. And it healed naturally, but also I injured my pelvis doing some work, electrical work, right? Fell on the ceiling. But the thing is, what I realized is if I had given up, like, for some reason I feel as if exercising, it just helped with it. Because, you know, I realizing the more exercise, the rigorous exercise I do, especially with my lower back in the back of my legs, etc., all of these, just strengthening your limbs, your pelvis area and all your limbs, your body feel better, like you feel like your bone is giving a response to growth, and you put stress on them, like when you really, you know what I mean, weight bearing and just normal body calisthenics, you know, I feel like I get a better response in my body.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. So, like, even with people who have, like, early osteoarthritis and some joint problems, we do tell them to exercise. So physiotherapy and continuing to use the joint is actually going to be better, because
I've noticed it. But I read some time ago that there are some innovations in some natural form of inducing the cartilage to grow back. I think they have some evidence. This is because the new way. I saw a doctor somewhere. I can't remember where, but I didn't pay too much attention because there's so much other. I wanted to comment on the mask wearing and the pandemic being discontinued, right? And so a lot of people have a problem with that because in China, I see where they suppressed that information. I think they didn't access it for too long. So it's on social media. And I was wondering why would China do that, right? And so it seems a form of control, but you see it, then you see a new paradigm comes up with the mass mandates. You know, the thing is, Dr. D, I'm so disillusioned, right, in the psyche of the people until that you realize that we're in a hopeless state because most of us really don't see where the world is headed. You was hoping with the information, with the release of the information in the books and on online, and it, you know, everybody just expected of this one-way narrative. It's like, you know, all comes into play with the book, The Fourth Industrial Revolution. Everybody should think alike and say the same thing, and if you deviate. It was a caller that upsetted me today. He said that they should, I don't know if he was joking, but he was saying, he was lambasting blackmail. So he was saying he should call and, I mean, it just make, I don't know if he's joking, saying they should just pull him down and vaccinate him. But those type of paradigms.
Who's that? He was saying that about another person?
Yeah, like, you know, blackmail, who's called the talk shows and stuff like that. But I just saying, I thought it was very, very insensitive. And you know what I mean? It's just, I find it to be insensitive because in his ignorance, which he is, right? And I wouldn't apologize because just for you to get on that level, right, of brainwashing or inculcation is scary because he haven't read enough, right? And he's not conscious about certain things, right? And it seems to me as if me coming on the radio, even in talking to you and just discussing things as being a non-pundit, I don't know what it is, but this is what the radio is for. I'm not an honestly high society person who's into this haughtiness or social status quo agenda. You know, it is what it is. And so if something affects my life, why is it that I can't look into it for myself with my sovereign being and my inalienable rights? But what is frightening for me is the collapse of freedoms. And most of us are taking it for joke. And then nobody is standing up for somebody's rights to make up their own mind and say this and say that. And so that every, you know, throughout history, we was always using the better good to induce tyranny when you really look at it. It's just the way it is. And so even in Ted Kaczynski's writing, even though he was the Unabomber, right, but he was a very intelligent man when you look at this story. And so I was watching it the other day because I knew about it from a long time. He used to come on the internet, right? And so when they read the letter that his wife identified him with, something that he said, and it was about technology. And I knew that ideology, and Birch and Russell discussed that ideology of the effects of science on society. And so we all are blindly, right, helping enslave ourselves, right, and don't even realize it. And this is frightening to me that it's like, in other words, even when Samuel Butler was fighting for freedoms, in the reading his biography, some Negroes were saying, cool down, you upsetting Martha. And so I see it as the same narrative when people trying to control the narrative as if the news media, Radio 1, the tabloid, should be the vessel of truth. That doesn't work for some people. I mean, we should have the right to speak our minds and just be at that. I haven't never called a talk show. I don't claim to cure nobody. I'm just referring to Dr. Moby and Saeed, Gerd Vandenbosch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who have been castigating these people on social media, and the paradigms are matching what these people are saying. And so I'm enjoying the book Viral, right? And in the book Viral, Alina Chan, she leaves up to the reader, and there's a preponderance of evidence to show biological manipulation, because what you have seen is from the virus is lodged in the upper respiratory tract. You see where they were least effective in the lungs, et cetera, the lower. And then, did you see with SARS-CoV-2, even though it has a low, way lower death rate than MERS, you see that SARS-CoV-2 excels in the upper respiratory tract and in the lungs, where it causes the inflammation, the cytokinemic storm, et cetera. And then, which they say mess up the alveoli. We know that's the sac-like structures in the lungs that cause exchange the air or oxygen, et cetera. And so what happens
52.
Is now,
52.
Yes.
Do you think that we still need to wear a mask?
No. A confined space and for long periods of time. But, you know, the thing is, we need to come up with a true study about it. But outdoor no one is wearing a mask inside the airport, but just remember the study. I don't know if you read the study about the mice and compartmentalized mice. You read that study? Wearing the mask, and it did show the reduced transmission, but it didn't show the stop transmission. And so the fact that
it was very minimal. And then what you have to consider is that the type of mask that you're wearing.
Yes.
Most people are not wearing a mask that will stop transmission at all.
Yeah, Dr. 10 or 20%. You're very deep, and you brought up an interesting thing that I know about from reverse osmosis and waking around reverse osmosis. But like Tate Adley said on the eye opener the other day, it doesn't supposed to make sense. So we know it goes with microns. And so the 0.5 micron is what's inside the RO filters. And so I realized the N95, I think, is 0.5. So if you calculate the diameter, they say that the coronaviruses range from 80 to 100 nanometers. You divide it by 25,400, and that'll give you it in inches. And then you could do the math with the V on the 18.5. average size micron on cloth mask, and then you know that obviously the mask cannot stop the virus from coming in because you could look at the decimals and see which number is bigger and greater. And so what happens is
also more global studies comparing countries that wore masks versus those that did not, and there was not significant difference in that at all. And so it becomes then a balance of what you lose for what you gain. So if you're gaining very little and you're losing quite a lot, then overall it starts not to make sense, right? So
Tate made me laugh that day when he said it, because it really, as far as transmission dynamics, vaccine efficacy, released clinical trials data, what one's supposed to do? Just read this information and just say what? I mean,
so why do you think we're still here? Knowing that all around us, everyone's
because it's all about
mask.
Control. It's really all about control, because, you know, they said that, you know, post-pandemic, most governments can move towards a more egalitarian society or a more totalized society. So they're giving them these options. And, you know, most of us are not juxtaposing what we should. And so, From a caller could call and say, you should hold on blackmail and stick him with the vaccine, right? Maybe he should consider reading The Poison Needle, Suppress Facts About Vaccination by Dr. Eleanor McBain. And maybe he should consider reading the book Viral. And maybe he should consider reading and just following trial site and just being true to himself and humanity. So what I'm saying is, we enslaving ourselves with our ignorance. Is if someone is sharing knowledge who drop out of college, it's a problem. That's what I feel. But I don't know what I have done to people, like, for them to be like, you know, I mean, people see me, they say, yeah, 52, wait, but they see I'm a Don, a person, he rides a bicycle, he doesn't care what the people think. I don't call these talk shows, Dr. D, for people to really agree with me. I keep telling them that. You see, but what I'm hoping is, even if one person in the pasture, I've called myself a sheep. So, you know, the thing is, it's all about the truth. It's nothing about to do with me. You know, I'm not saying nothing that's new. All of these concepts, now they have a doctor on, trying to deny our viral immune escape and all of this ignorance, right? But she's so intelligent, she didn't once mention gain-of-function research, that it is being shown that the virus eventually now is bonding with the kidneys, the liver, the brain, because those are where all the ACE2 receptors are. And this is what they fail to be teaching the people, and they're making it look as if this is what I see increasing lethality as gain-of-function research went on from the initial studies of SARS from 2017.
Wrap it all up.
Alina Chan's book, Viral.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Always great comments. Always brings a lot to the table in the discussion of COVID. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. But you do bring up a lot of great points about all of that. So, you know, it's really that there's so much data out there. And I think that's my big thing at this point. You know, I think maybe earlier on, I was a little bit more chill because I think, you know, people were just trying to figure it out. Not everybody gets into things like the way I get into things and study. And I know that it takes time for this stuff, but it's out there. And of course, it seems like no matter what data comes out, it really depends on what the political will is at the time. So we're going to see. We're a little bit behind in terms of that. And so that's what I really wanted to touch on tonight in terms of just COVID. So we're just going to go through a couple more of these causes of pain just to complete our list. And there's some ones on there that are kind of interesting. So when we're talking about joint pain, surprisingly, it could involve your thyroid. So if you have an underactive thyroid and you're not producing enough thyroid hormone, metabolism can basically slow down. And this causes you to build up fluid sometimes in your joints, and this can cause pressure or pain. So surprisingly or not, thyroid disease can be one of those things. And that's why it's really good to come in and get your annuals, get your physicals. And sometimes you're able to pick up some of these things that you would not really connect in the beginning. It could be an infectious cause. So you can have infectious arthritis. And this can be very, very painful. So if you have a really hot joint, it's really, really painful. You're having maybe fever and other things that are going on. You could have infection that's in your bloodstream, and it can affect your joints. We have another caller. I think we have more time. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Yes, a patient who has gout, his fingers and all of that. What natural things he can take, what food he needs to avoid, and everything to ease the pain of gout.
So a lot of people who have gout have what we call an increase in their uric acid. So you want to look for, you want to remove foods out of your diet that are really high in uric acid. And what they find is that, you know, gout used to be considered what you call a rich man's disease. And that was because of the things that people would eat. And they found that the things that you eat actually stimulated you getting this increased uric acid and causing you to get out. So there's actually lots of foods that you need to avoid in terms of causing inflammation that are related to gout. One of the things, too, is people who drink quite
if you'd
a bit
like
of alcohol. Okay, caller, sorry, you're still on there. It's quite related to gout. So we tell our persons who have high amounts of gout to kind of lay off the alcohol because that tends to introduce a lot of gas. Also, it's going to be people who eat a lot of meat. And so you want to actually kind of remove if you have a high meat content diet. And, you know, I'm really all for meat, but in moderation. So you want to look at the foods that are inside your diet and how that would be affected. Of course, you want to get back into your fruits and vegetables that are going to be anti-inflammatory foods. So you want to look at improving your diet, improving things that cause inflammation. I find that canned foods are also really related to inflammation and gout and arthritis. And so you want to switch from a regular diet to an anti-inflammatory diet. And you want to start by removing a lot of your processed foods. And so you want to remove a lot of your processed foods. You want to get back, you want to get some of those refined carbohydrates out of your body. And you want to get away from foods that are high and rich in saturated fats like French fries, sodas, margarine, shortening. Why I feel like, you know, but just good old butter is a lot going to be a lot better for you than like shortening and margarine and all of these types of things. So you want to do an anti-inflammatory diet if you are suffering from gout. And, you know, you can sit down with your nutritionist or your doctor and kind of go through that. But you want to really move away from a lot of that processed foods back into your really healthy foods that are going to be anti-inflammatory. And that's kind of like the basics of it all. What I usually do with my patients is I would sit down with them and kind of find out maybe what are some of the foods or the triggers for them. After we've looked at the basic things like, you know, alcohol and meats, and stuff like that. And then sometimes some people have specific triggers. I had a patient and her trigger was canned meats. So like tuna, corned beef, those things in the can, that was her trigger. And we were able to eliminate that out of her diet and she felt a lot better. And so sometimes people, and you need to identify what those things are specifically even for you and move them from the diet and then go to a very kind of clean, fresh, anti-inflammatory diet. That's what you want to do. That's basically how gout relates to food. So gout is one of those things. Yes. So we were talking about the other types of pain that causes pain. We talked about possible infection and also, of course, rheumatoid arthritis, which is a kind of like an autoimmune disorder. It's actually the body attacking itself. And this is for reasons for aging, possible previous infection. We sometimes relate some of these autoimmune diseases to previous viral infections. And so people tend to develop this over time, and they get these joints that are really red, really swollen, they get fatigue. There are a lot of symptomatic things that come with rheumatoid arthritis. So it's a really, really much more involved than just like an osteoarthritis, which comes with age. And some people can have fever, they can have low-grade depression, malaise, changes in their appetite, and even weight loss. And we find out if you have gout, you have to take some blood tests to find out, and we look at certain factors and we kind of figure out if you have rheumatoid or not. And so rheumatoid is really a really chronic, really, really bad disease, and it can really affect your joint health and your way of life. So you want to get diagnosed for that pretty quickly, go in and see it. And the next one was going to be gout, but that came up with our caller. And that's a really painful condition. Most people know gout from the fact that it usually affects like the big toe, which is kind of unusual for the other types of arthritis. And you can have heat, swelling, severe pain, and it can spread to other joints. So it doesn't just stay in the big toe area. And like we talked about, alcohol, sugary drinks, dehydration, certain medications that you might be on may also trigger gout. And so you really want to look at your diet and look at lowering your protein consumption and try to lose weight, because weight, being overweight, usually is also a sign of inflammation. It's a sign that how our body is processing the food that we're putting in. And so that's a really big one. So gout is really kind of lifestyle related. Then lupus. Lupus can also, what we call SLE. So SLE or lupus, which is another autoimmune disorder, also can affect your joints. So it can just be a sign or symptom of something a lot deeper like lupus. And lupus can affect many different organs, different parts of the body, your skin, and your immune system. And so it usually comes with a rash and as well, and other telltale signs that are related to lupus disease. People can have all different problems, from breathing problems, dry mouth, dry eyes. Lupus is very, very involved, and you have to do specific tests for that. For the Americans, Lyme disease, we don't see that as much here. And there are certain STDs that also can be causing joint pain. So this one, gonorrhea, which is really a common STD. I've seen a lot of patients. This is the STD that's really, really common, chlamydia and gonorrhea. But gonorrhea is something that if it's not properly treated, it actually can start to affect your joints. So it's really important if you're sexually active, if you're not using protection, or if you feel like, you know, you need to get yourself checked out, you should go and get yourself checked out. Because sometimes these things cannot show symptoms, and they linger inside the body, and they can lead to other problems. And so this particular STD, gonorrhea, if it's not treated with the appropriate antibiotics and it's left untreated, it can lead to some forms of joint pain. And so you need to go to the doctor, you'd have to get a test done, you'd have to be treated for that correctly. And if not, you can have swollen joints and you may not know why. You might end up with an infected arthritis, and it may just be because of this infection and you didn't even know you had it. So it's really important to get that testing done and to kind of know, you know, there's risks out there and you need to protect yourself. Very, very important. So how can you prevent arthritis? Well, you can prevent it. We'll just go through it quickly because we're almost out of time. But by controlling your blood sugar, a lot of these arthritic pictures relate to our diet and what we put in our body. You want to maintain a healthy weight. You want to exercise 30 minutes a day. You want to reduce the inflammatory foods in your body, such as sugars, trans fats, certain oils, refined carbohydrates, processed meats, and your saturated fats. And you want to try to live a life away from inflammation. And so these are some of the key things that you want to look at in terms of if you're having any kind of joint pain, but get the joint pain checked out. It may be something simple. It may be something that's triggering it. And so you can kind of get the treatment that you need in order to sort that out. So many different causes for arthritis out there, many different causes for joint pain. A lot of them come back just to what we talk about all the time, which is the things that we do in our life. Inflammatory, the diet, the exercise, and whatsoever. So why is it so hard for us to live that kind of life? I know it's very difficult, and we all have our challenges. But if each every day we take the opportunity to just live a little bit better, to clean up our diet just a little bit more, to do a little bit more exercise, then we will have a healthier and happier Bahamas. We will be free from a lot of these chronic diseases, and we'll be able to manage our lifestyle a lot better. And that's what I really want to see for the future of the Bahamas, a healthier Bahamas, one in which we are able to be a very productive society, one that is efficient and able-bodied and young and not so important to our economy and our way of life and our future. And so the best thing to do is to start teaching these habits to your children very, very early in life, and so that we can have a future Bahamian society that's a lot healthier. And that's really where the key comes in. Take the knowledge for yourself, take it also for your children and your family, and spread that information to each and everyone so we can have a different culture, a healthier lifestyle, and a healthier way of life. I want to thank you all for listening tonight on The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Janotha Archer, on a Tuesday evening, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health needs. Another great show. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you next week, Tuesday, on Guardian Radio 96.9. Good night.